Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon for the first of two podcasts coming in your feed this week. So you need to be subscribed on Acast, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. You need to follow us in the cesspit at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. That's it. Just wait till we're doing the pod to sort your microphone out. Yeah. How are you doing there? That's JB.
Hello, Tim.
And that is Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Right, so this podcast is going to focus on the Six Nations, and I was going to say what a weekend, but actually, there were two games that were quite exciting.
There were only two games, weren't there?
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, Scottish fans, and Italian fans, if you happen to be an Italian fan, but I don't think your game deserved a great deal of chat.
No.
Stuart Hogg deserves a mention.
Stuart Hogg definitely does.
That try was unbelievable.
Didn't see it. I actually haven't seen any of the highlights of it. I was playing against West Park St Helens this week in what can only be described as an amazing match. An amazing match.
Better than the 17-0 Scotland-Italy?
It was 13-14 to us or something like that. Or 14... No, 13-12. 13-12.
One observation, which I watched the France-Wales game in a bar, well, in a hotel bar in Exeter with Hugo Monnier of... obviously, BT Sport, and amongst some various other people.
Friend of the pod.
Obviously. And Hugo pointed this out. He said, compare the way Roman Untermak just nonchalantly just got up and ran back to the halfway line or ran back to take a conversion after he scored a very, very important try versus Adam Hastings celebrating like he'd won a World Cup. Actually, maybe I shouldn't. I might be throwing Hugo under a bus if I say
that. No, it's fine. It's fine. If there is a man that could take the impact of a bus, it is definitely Hugo. he's a big boy. And that's a very astute observation. And if we do edit it out, I will claim that as my own. So,
this game, so the Scotland Italy game, watch the full thing. I was so disappointed for both teams that there weren't more tries in it. Because both teams, when there was. Some turnover ball. They both wanted to play. They both had good ambition, went wide early, attacked the line, broke the line, but could not get over the try line. And that was the most disappointing thing, that this could have finished 36-38, but it didn't. It was a much worse game. The scoreline was much worse than the game suggested.
Is this too simplistic a thing to say for Italy? It's that they do... lots of things well, like you say, they go wide early, they actually make a lot of ground in outside channels. But because they do it all the time, you know exactly what's coming. All they need is a slight bit of variation, and it might make that more effective.
Yeah. Well, a bit more variation, I think, yes, would help, because they are reliant on a few people.
Jake Peledri.
Peledri. If they're going tight, Peledri. They need Peledri. If they're going wide, Minozzi. And Haywood did have a very good game.
When we do the domestic podcast in a couple of days, you'll have to remind me to mention, how is Jake Peledri not a starter at Gloucester? Absolutely ridiculous, but anyway,
isn't it?
Anyway, I feel a little bit like we've already talked too much about that game.
Yes, I'll just say it again. Stuart Hogg, that was magnificent.
Worth the money.
Afterburners.
Yes.
Do you know what this game makes me think? Like all the games make me think. This is the weekend that history repeated itself. This should have been the way of the world. Basically forever. These set of results, Italy are not particularly good, Scotland are kind of just a bit better than Italy, and then Wales and Ireland are sort of jobbing for, you know, the supremacy of the second tier of the Six Nations as the two big countries battle it out. That is how it should always have been, except for, you know, we had Gatland, who was an enormous disruptor. And then, you know, the Irish have done very, very well. But, like, the Irish and the Welsh are basically the same now, and, you know, England and France are powering on.
This, it did feel like the natural order was restored a little bit this weekend. Certainly in terms of the powers.
Yeah.
England and France overpowering Wales and Ireland, and then, as you said, the other two kind of also runs.
Yeah, I mean, Wales remind me of Scotland now, which is Scotland play lovely rugby, low ambition, no substance. And that's Wales. They're just careless and loose.
Oh, well, yeah, Wales have got... they've got some really good things going on.
Go on, you tell me the good things, because I can't think of many.
So, good things. Their pack generally went pretty well. Bigger is sensational.
Yeah. Dan Bigger is sensational. There is no... he's my favourite player on the planet, so yes.
Dan Bigger, I absolutely love him. I think he was brilliant.
I've been saying this for quite some time now.
They've got a huge... they've got a nice squad. They've got huge experience across that squad in lots of positions. And for all that, the big issue, the thing that let them down this week was their decision-making repeatedly. And a great example is the end of that first half when Alan Wynne-Jones at least twice turns down kickable penalties.
Oh, my God.
And with hindsight, if they've scored the try, with hindsight, we'd have been saying, great decision, bold decision, and paid off. As it happened, he turns down consecutive options for 3 points and eats half of the penalty, half the yellow card.
Yes.
It was just, it came across as crazy. And at the first one, I say, no, take your three, get off. You've got 10 minutes then to play in the second half.
Completely agree, mate.
Well, I actually don't mind that decision to go for the jugular. It was an execution issue, because especially when I was watching it going, what are France doing? Why is Gael Ficou going to number 8?
Yeah.
Genius.
Because...
Is the space?
No. Yeah. Well, like, hold on. You've just handed Wales, like, with good skill and execution, that should be, if you put one of your wingers at number 8, they're 5 metres out, you should be able to do a... like a training drill,
yeah.
Hands in one corner or the other.
Now,
yes,
I might be
you
wrong
should
here.
Be able to, done right, right?
100%.
I do not know what the laws are, right? But something interesting happened in the game we played yesterday. This is Toc H, right? And I am going to come back to Wales, because I know everyone wants to talk about Toc H. But I know everyone wants to talk about Toc H.
They are comparable.
They are comparable. Yeah. I think I compared my experience of playing...
I know what you were going to say. It was Exeter struggling in Europe to Broughton Park not being able to beat Liverpool St Helens.
Something like Broughton Park, who? Toc H, mate.
Toc H.
Ding.
Yeah, so we had a red card, and the week before I must have had a yellow card. But the ruling by the referee on both occasions was you have to have 8 in the scrum for
bollocks.
Safety reasons. That is nonsense, isn't it?
Bollocks. Unless it's junior level.
Unless it's different.
I think it's
at lower
level. I think it's junior levels.
I don't think we were playing under fives.
Yeah. Are you sure?
unless
did you have a good week?
Because yeah. the whole point of rugby is the laws are the same elite level down to grassroots, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes, but there are interchanges at lower level. So yes. There are some things that are different.
Mm.
But that's a men on the
field.
I think that's
a choice. I think it might be the case at Colts or lower.
Well, 2 weeks running, we've been told we need 8 in the scrum.
Well, maybe it is a law then.
I'm definitely surprised at that.
Yeah,
but,
I'm pretty sure that you don't need.
But it definitely isn't at international level.
Yes,
that much we can say. So
yeah, going back to that.
Yeah.
And that's the next point about the decision making. That was a really good example of there is space, and instead of attacking the space, they chose to go one out runners. And if anyone's watched France in the past 3 weeks since Sean Edwards has been defence coach, or if any of those players had watched Wales in the past 10 years, 15 years when Sean Edwards was defence coach, you know it's incredibly difficult to break down a Sean Edwards coach team on their own line. Mm. It was,
and
that
as it
was
should
just
be.
Stupid.
I mean, they don't have...
Yeah.
I mean, you say they put it in hands in the corner, which is fine, but actually you don't have to drop anyone back, do you? Because you're on the 5 metre.
It's especially difficult to score from a 5 metre scrum, say Faletau running out, when Fakatawa is a mile offside.
Yeah.
You look at the stills, there's a still of Faletau with his hands on the ball, with the ball still on the deck, and Fakatawa is It's a 5 metre scrum. Vakatawa is halfway between the try line and the 5 metre. Yeah. No wonder he gets hit. I was really
he's ahead of the hind of foot. So
I was really cheesed off with Matthew Carley on that, and for a number of reasons. But it still doesn't excuse the fact there was simple hands and a score. So I don't mind that they didn't take the three on that particular occasion.
I've got to say,
but like you say,
I hated it because I think the whole point of the captaincy is you know how the ref is reffing it and you react to him. Your job isn't to agree, it's to comply. You then know
you better tell Dan Bigger that.
Yeah, well, there's also the idea that... you've also got to know what your team is capable of. So obviously he thought he was capable. And the last part about this is, once he made that decision, he made a rod for his own back. Because when that penalty is effectively repeated the second time round, what do you do? Like, psychologically, do you say, I was wrong, go get the three? And actually, 3 points would have won it. I mean, that was the difference, I think.
And it's a sunk cost fallacy that you think, all right, I've gone for it once, therefore I've got to go for it.
We've talked about this before, playing on tilt, chasing losses.
There's a bit playing on tilt and there's the sunk cost. He would have, at the second time, he still would have been better to take the three.
He got a let off.
So do you remember, this game really reminded me of, and I looked it up, it was Wales versus Scotland at Murrayfield 3 years ago, 2017, when Alan Wynne-Jones was captain. And Alan Wynne-Jones... So I had it in my head until very recently, Alan Wynne-Jones was not a captain, was not right to be a captain.
Mm.
And it was this game, Scotland-Wales,
three years ago.
And he made multiple bad decisions. And then in the last year, he's been brilliant and made all the right decisions at the right times. And then this just reminded
me they should have some sort of system where
that weakness.
You get a guy in just for his intellect and he has to pass like quizzes and different sort of tests, different score lines, different probabilities, remembers them. And you can still have Alan Wynne as your captain, but then you need to refer to someone. Maybe someone you stick out on the wing.
Yeah.
You can come up to you and say, actually, this, and this. Or even better, have one of the water boys do it.
Yeah, water boys, perfect.
I mean, they've got to run on with water anyway. Well,
you've got a British and Irish Lions captain and former Wales captain in Warburton.
Yeah.
Being a water boy.
I don't like that. Don't like that one bit.
It would have been just those errors, those captain's errors. And they cost, because at the end of the game, if there was slightly different positioning towards the end of the game, for example, when they had the repeated scrum penalties, first choice tight head gets sent off, and Demba Bamba comes on,
smashes them everywhere,
and smashes them.
Well, Wayne Pivac was very upset about that
as well.
Said that Demba Bamba came on and just scrummaged sideways.
That's nonsense. He's a tight head. I mean, it's very hard to. I mean, if he's going sideways, there are multiple things that you can do. It also means that probably he's got a little bit of pressure from the loose head, much like Ellis Gendry was doing today, which I do not mind at all. It's not like a loose head way. It's so obviously sideways. I mean, I don't buy that at all.
Well, I mean,
they lost fair and square.
I think what you can say is that there's a magic eight ball element of scrums.
Yes.
And
there is a lottery.
You're always open.
As long as you're dominant, you win, is kind of how I look at it.
Generally, yeah.
Generally, yes. Let's get on to just tapping into the officiating.
You really got it in for Matthew Carley today, I can tell.
I'm really disappointed.
You're itching.
Because Wayne Barnes was on the touchline, mm-hmm. and he's been an absolutely outstanding, international referee. Best in the world.
Yep.
Best of his generation. And they're clearly going, right, we need to bring these English guys through, Luke Pearce and obviously Matthew Carley.
Mm. Yeah.
They picked a big game for him. And I think he's clearly, he'll learn a lot from it, I'm sure, and he'll be a great ref. I think he bottled it.
I don't know. I mean,
on the knock-on, deliberate knock-on.
He absolutely bottled that decision.
I like that that decision. I thought the player's eyes were on the tackle. He wraps. I mean...
He doesn't wrap.
He does. It was a good tackle.
He doesn't wrap.
He does. He wraps his arms.
Not with the arm that hits the ball,
With the arm that hits the ball. I mean, I actually thought...
Come on, think about how you tackle.
If you remove
you
the ball...
You don't tackle like... You don't tackle...
You've not seen me tackle. I think if you remove the ball from that picture and just said this was a tackle, you'd say, that's how people tackle. That is a well-formed tackle.
Oh, I disagree with that.
I was happy with it, to be honest.
I didn't have... I So I didn't have an issue with the way it was officiated, actually. I'm disappointed because I've seen so many of those given as a yellow card and a penalty.
Yeah.
Or yellow card and penalty try, potentially.
In the Premiership, that is... I'm telling you, if that had happened today in a Premiership game, Matthew Carley would have given that yellow card, possibly penalty.
If there wasn't as much riding on it, he...
I'm telling you, we all watch a lot of Premiership, and I'm telling you, any Premiership game, that is automatic pen yellow card. So it might have been the case that had it been an Italian ref, we could have gone, or maybe they do it differently in the Pro 14.
But bottling it, I mean, I would guess it if he was bottling it if the teams were reversed because of the home team. I think it takes a lot of bottle to go against the Welsh team and the Welsh crowd. Mm. That's a big decision. And he gets it wrong, but I don't think he's bottled it. I think, actually, he would have bottled it, if you reverse those teams, definitely is that case. You can get it wrong, but not bottle it.
You would not see that not being given a penalty and a yellow card in any Premiership game.
I do agree with that, and that's where I don't like the inconsistency. But I don't hate that call, because someone I can't remember where I read it, but someone said Will Emsey, wasn't it, knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
And in my head, he did know what he was doing. But actually, the best thing that he can do... So, by the time he's committed to that tackle, he doesn't know if Ken Owens is going to hold it, pass it, ship it, tap it on. He doesn't know what's going to happen. So he commits, hoping the best thing is he gets man and ball.
Yeah.
And after that, he hopes he at least tackles high enough to dislodge the ball or knock the arms. So I don't hate the decision.
Who puts their arm... Like, if you're tackling, you at least have your hand... wrapping in towards the body. He has his palm like he's hitting it like a volleyball.
All right, look at it from the other side.
I think his arm was an insurance policy. He was going man and ball. His arm was a...
Best case would be man and ball.
We all agree that if it's a Premiership or any high standard of rugby, with not as much riding on it, potentially, but we all agree most of the time that is given as a yellow card penalty try, don't we?
Well, definitely yellow card.
Yellow, yeah. I'd question the penalty try.
Josh Adams is scoring that if he gets it.
So that's a penalty try, but
you don't know the trajectory of the ball leaving Ken Owens' hands. Yeah. No. You don't know if it's going behind him, above him, to his knees.
But we all know that
this is top try scorer at the World Cup, Josh Adams.
If it goes to his hands,
but we don't know. We can all sort of agree that the consequences for doing this are serious.
Yeah,
and so then let me ask you this: do we think that Wilhelms is that stupid that when he's made all of his decisions, he thinks, right, I'm going to knock it on now with this amount of time to go, with that score? And with these consequences, there is no way he decides to do that. In my opinion,
that sort of thought process doesn't happen, does it? But I think
knock it forward. I mean, that's the last thing you want.
No, yes, I think his arm was going. I think his arm was going for. He was going man and ball tackle with his arm out wide enough to get the ball as well.
That's
why I have some sympathy for the decision.
I'd also have sympathy if he said, "Yeah, yellow card," because. You know, you were careless. You were careless and you ruined a try. But actually, I'd quite like it not being like that because, it could be careless. He didn't mean to knock it on. He was in the process of a tackle.
So how do you then, if you took
mind
that...
Mind you, no one means to knock
if
on.
You took that, yeah, I was going to say, if you took if you took what you're saying now, how do you then transpose that onto any other game?
What? How's that?
As in, where do you draw that line between... If he's got palm up...
Mm. I don't think he did.
He did.
We'll have to.
He hits it forward like a volleyball.
We could do 10 minutes of me saying he is.
Whether it was accidental or not, it's one of those where we've argued many times about high tackles and stuff, and you say, yeah, I don't think he intended to hit him high, but you put yourself in that position because you could have gone lower. He put himself in the position where his palm is hitting it like a volleyball forward.
Who reviewed it?
The TMO is a very experienced TMO.
And it was Carl Dixon.
Carl Dixon was the near-side TMO.
So he gave
the
original call that it's fine.
Yeah, Carl Dixon said, I think that's fine. That's in the tackle or however he phrased it.
You go back and look at it again, and Wayne Barnes and the three of them are still together. You go back and look at Wayne Barnes' face.
Mm.
I think he knows.
But he kept it quiet. That's a conspiracy.
If you are a Welsh fan or a Welsh player. Yeah. That was not the sole reason for the defeat.
I'm going to put a lot of blame on Tomkins, a big contributing
factor for sure. But yes, you're right. That was a 14 point try. That one for Untermack, because that was a try for Wales. Tomkins gives it slightly earlier.
I tell you what,
Tomkins did some brilliant things as well.
He is Wales. He is the epitome of the new Wales. Does brilliant things. ultimately does stupid things in at big times. So he knocked it on just before half time, killed that move.
That killed the move.
Amazing break. Gives the ball, they're probably in. And he did something else as well, which I just thought was...
The bit I found weirdest about Tompkins was the number of times he found himself at dummy half, scrum half.
Dummy half, nice.
When there was a scrum half there, when Gareth Davis was there, and he found himself picking up and passing.
His first game, I thought he looked brain dead in defence. He looks like he's lost. Now that seems to have cleared itself up a bit. And I know he's new to international rugby, and he's already new systems. He's already making an impact. So yeah, these things might iron themselves out, and he might become.
He looks really promising.
Incredible. But promising's not really good enough, is it? I mean,
this is a great example of where stats only tell the half of the story, because his offensive stats are by far the best, not just in the Welsh team. By far the best on the whole pitch, and the whole team. But for all the good things he did, there were a few strange ones.
Yeah, something else he did as well, which I can't remember now. I should have written it down. But I just think, you know, like that break, statistically, that break will go down as something brilliant, something genius. But actually, he should have given the ball.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't really tell the story that I want it to tell.
I'm not as much of a doom monger on Wales as...
It's over, Tim.
Me neither,
to be honest.
It's not going to turn itself around. It's going to get worse.
They could have won that game.
Some better decision making.
I know they should have won a coulda, but yeah.
This is just the Wales of old. No, this is what we're back to.
So on that then, moving off Wales, how good are France, or how much have England and Wales flattered to deceive France?
I think France are legitimately very, very good. And the reason I think this is because they can beat you in multiple different ways. So that Wilhelm's try at the start was just brute power. Just brute power. Front peels don't work. Well, front peels don't work. This is a nonsense. How could you score a try from a front peel?
How many times in my rugby playing days, from school level right up to first, do you practice front peels on a Thursday night or whatever? And then they never, ever work.
That struck me as a Sean Edwards identifying a weakness in the Welsh defensive pattern. That they'll always put the scrum half and the blindside winger there on a 5 metre.
I'm pretty sure.
I designed the system, so I know it.
I'm pretty sure.
He had the plans for the Death Star.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, right, that Paul Wilhelms, or whatever his name.
Willemsy.
I'm sure he's one of the biggest players ever to play in international rugby. I'm sure he's up there.
He's big.
Like, he's 120 plus, isn't he? He's huge. He's,
yeah, 130 kg and 6'7" or 6'8".
I'm certain when France put out their biggest ever pack, the biggest ever pack for international rugby last year, he was in the second row on debut, and he stood up as being massive.
Yeah, he's 6'7" and 135 kg, which
that's
is...
That's a big man.
21 and a half.
I don't know, can you confirm? Is that a big man?
It's quite large.
It's a big man.
Now, is that a tight headlock? That's what I want to know.
Sounds like a tight headlock.
It's definitely not a loose headlock.
It might not be a loose headlock.
If a loose headlock exists.
Well, I think that's where I'm going next. I don't think loose headlock exists. I think they're all tight headlocks now. Because the props are so powerful. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Do you know, Romain Untermack, it was the first player... the first player that wasn't a back rower to get a man of the match. If you're on the BBC, player of the match.
Player of the match.
Oh, why? Can we not say man?
Can't say man.
Of course not.
Do you want to assume...
Yeah, like, because we'd offend all the women that played, of course.
Well, yeah. For whatever reason, it's player of the match. Yeah,
player of the match. There is a long and proud tradition of Wales midfield defenders being women. I mean, yeah, that's a fact.
Anyway, but yeah, he was the first player that wasn't a back rower.
Amazing stuff.
In the tournament. So
oh, let's talk about... And Gregory Aldrit, by the way, who's a bloody amazing player.
They've got a few handy players.
He is an outstanding player. Eddie Butler gets a lot of stick, doesn't he, for the pronunciation of names.
Benjamin Kizer.
Gregory Aldrit is half Scottish.
Wesley Fofana.
In fact, he might not be full Scottish. He grew up in France. He's Scottish.
He's certainly got one Scottish parent. Yeah.
His name is Gregory Aldrit.
Eddie Butler's eased up on that a little bit. Have you noticed?
No. I noticed. But I also noticed his Untermack was a grunt.
Roman.
Untermack.
Do you remember the Liverpool football player, Sebastian Coates, or whatever his name is?
No, I don't.
He was like Peruvian or Paraguayan or something like that. Is that the same thing? Right. So for years,
some Central or South American,
some Central American, heritage of some sort, right? And the commentators used to go on all the time, like Sebastian Quatez. Anyway, turns out he had a Scottish dad, and his name was actually Sebastian Coates, and we'd all been
Quatez. Yeah, he was at Liverpool.
No, it's Coates. It's actually Coates. He's got an actual Scottish dad. Same with Aldrit. His name's Aldrit. So there you go. That was my analysis of France's number eight play.
I don't think we'll get onto England, obviously, but to answer your question about France, yes, they're very good. They've had a good tournament. I think they did not get the best of England. England had one terrible half, and everyone, yourself included, thought the wheels have come off England and it's a dreadful England team.
England or we know exactly what they are now.
Yeah, and France beat a decent Wales team who could have won it and will kick themselves. France deserved the win, don't get me wrong. They are good.
The ambition of some of the stuff. The try which was disallowed for France.
Oh, yeah.
That was
might have been one of the best tries of the last decade, should it have stood.
When did you first start watching Five Nations or Six Nations or whatever?
Oh, as early as I can remember, I think.
Yeah, for me, mid-90s.
Yeah, well, for me, it was like late 80s, and that's what I remember of France.
Yeah.
That was France right there. And when they make a break, they flood players through, they offload, they cut different angles as they lift the ball. You know those little drills you used to do in training where, like, you run in a line,
a triangle,
Indian file or whatever,
yeah.
And then you just lift the ball and move to the side, and someone else comes through the middle.
The ball basically goes up and down exactly the same place.
That is like that to me is like how France play, but they do that, cut all sorts of different angles, and like you say, that disallowed try was so French.
It was amazing, and just for that, there should be a rule that you can overrule one forward pass a game or something, because it just wasn't worth the price the rugby community had to pay to have that try.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was a forward pass, sadly.
It definitely was.
But it was a brilliant try besides, because there's the break from Boutier, Vakatawa hitting the line. There's the offload out of the back when he's going into touch by Teddy Thomas, the pickup. And then there's the vision and the crossfield kick by Tamak and Fiku finishing it off. It was magnificent.
This French team is going to get better and better and better. And the Sean Edwards defence is going to get more and more solid. And as they find more of their identity and more cohesion, they are going to be awesome.
How French is it to be really good 4 months after a World Cup, though?
Not that bad. I mean, I don't know.
Inverse World Cup cycles.
Yeah. I mean, what I would say is...
Till the next one.
This is un-French because they are building something. Whereas what we usually have is this sort of weird stuttery start and stop, which is they are wonderful 1 week and then they're terrible the next. But you can see the progression. And I actually think they've been properly coached and they've got proper talent. I don't think this is French. Well, it is French. They're playing a wonderfully French way. But now they've got the Sean Edwards thing in there. I just see them improving every game as they go and lose to Ireland in 2 weeks' time.
Thomas McPherson has tweeted this to at Rugby Podcast and asked the question, should Bigger be punished by the referee's constant gobbing off at the ref? This is a pretty quick one, isn't it? Yes.
Yes.
Depends what he's saying.
So there were times definitely in that when he mouths FFS. He should... Like, that is perfectly legitimate to...
Depends what he's saying it to.
Penalise.
No, yeah, but he might be saying that to himself in like disappointment with his own actions, or he might be saying it's the ref.
He was staring at the referee, like, I mean, rolling his eyes and throwing his arms to the side.
It needs to be stopped because there's a lot of things that have happened this season where rugby can't sit on its on any sort of lofty perch about values and stuff, and this is just one thing that just I cannot abide and I cannot stand, and referees have got to get a grip of this.
Do it early. Yeah. First time anyone does it, penalise them or march them back.
Dan Bigger is particularly bad at this.
He's probably the worst. He's not alone.
Him and Farrell.
Fly half. Farrell and Sexton.
Sexton's bad for it. Yeah. I guess you just come to expect it from fly halves, and that's not to say it's right.
Yeah, it's not right.
And they do have a direct line of communication with... God, it must be hard, actually. It must be hard having... the greatest fly half on the planet in Bigger shouting at you. He knows stuff which you don't as well. That, That's the other thing.
He is incredibly brave. Andrew Foster, actually, let's just pick up on that, has tweeted and said, lads, who's your starting 10 for a hypothetical Lions test next week? Sexton woefully out of form. Farrell mostly playing 12. Finn not playing at all. Leaves Biggerall Ford, does it?
I agree with him. Yeah, Biggerall Ford.
Who would you pick?
Billy Burns.
Perfect.
I would be happy with either Biggerall Ford.
I think big game, need to make all of your kicks. Basically, and they're not one off, are they? They're three off test matches. Three off test matches on a 12-year cycle. How big is your man?
I'm still going Farrell.
I'm going. Do you know what?
Lions test next week.
Give him a few pints. Send on Finn. Start with bigger. And if you're down at half time, send on Finn.
Who's your 12 is a key question for this.
Well, I know Manning plays 13, but I'd be tempted to take Manning.
Yeah.
Really, really tempted to take him.
No, actually, you're right. The 12 is such a tough one to pick that I maybe Farrell is 12.
Well, yeah, and that's
maybe it's Ford and Farrell work really well. We'll get on to England. But
but that's what they did in 2017. And yeah. 12 is a very difficult position. I mean, Wales had to go to New Zealand. Ireland had to go to New Zealand. England had to go to Wigan. Mm. Scotland had to go to Australia. Three of the starting 12s are Antipodean, and one of them is a 10.
Yeah,
you could go for two. You could go for two big men, and have a Manu at 12 if you had a second pair of hands from 15. But I don't think there's anyone that fulfills that role.
No,
I know Scotland have been trying to do that a little bit with Hogg.
Yeah, but Hogg is.
But he's what he is.
Yeah.
Anyone know which current fullback played fly half for the Lions?
Hogg was selected. Hogg played in 2013, wasn't he?
In fact, I'm sure he was taken as a reserve.
He was the third choice 10. But he was also 15.
It's a very Eddie Jones move.
Yeah. I'm guessing
not Eddie Jones enough.
By the way, Ben Earl in training was running at wing and 13.
Of course he was.
Why not?
Of course he was.
I mean, he's rapid.
He is very, very quick.
I love it.
So, anything else anyone wants to add to Wales?
Not really. France, I think you're exactly right that France will continue to get better. Mm. I do think France... People right now are slightly overestimating how good they are right now.
I think I say they're underestimating them.
No, they're underestimating the potential. They're overestimating where they are right now.
I totally agree.
Because I think if you replay that England game, England win 6 out of 10.
But just imagine all that French flair, but with the ability to squeeze tight games.
Oh, yeah. And
you're talking
awesome.
Potential.
Yeah.
That's happened. That's happened.
So what's really impressed me about France... And also would give me optimism if I was, say, Ireland, to play him in a couple of weeks' time, or 3 weeks' time, is... So, France's defence looks magnificent in their 22. Because... So, the reason I raise that is because defensive structure is... It gets ever more simple the closer you get to your own line.
Yeah.
You have fewer and fewer decisions to make. Every individual player has fewer and fewer decisions to make the closer you get to your own line. If you're on the... halfway line or the opponent's 10-metre line and you're defending, you've got fundamental decisions. Do you drop one player, two player, three players? Do you blitz from 13? Do you blitz from the winger? Do you blitz from 12? How many forwards do you stand in line? All of those are decisions that change line speed, change position, change blitz, change spacing. When you're on your own line, it is just, it's line speed.
Blitz off the line and just hit the man in front of you.
Yeah, doesn't matter who you are, just take blitz and take the man. So... It's not surprising with the language barrier of Sean Edwards, I know he does speak some limited French, that the simplest thing has come so effectively, so fast. But also France do concede yards and they do concede line breaks further down the field. And that stuff will take some time to solidify. And they will get there, but I think they've been a little bit lucky with getting away with certainly England and Wales misfiring.
I can't see Ireland upsetting them. I weirdly can see Scotland doing it though.
I can maybe see Scotland.
Sorry, just
Lin.
Lin speed.
Yeah, that's how I can see us all panning out. I think
I have no doubt that if Edwards can get it right, the talent that's available to this French team is almost unparalleled.
Look what having several professional divisions does to the depth and quality of your squad.
Oh, look at Boutier, he was playing Pro de Deux last season.
It's crazy. Look at this one. I agree with JB about the potential. I agree with Phil that there's people maybe being a bit too trigger happy with some of the thoughts. Here's an example from a listener, and I really appreciate your tweet, Johnny McFadden at Rugby Podcast. And there is a tendency to do this. Andy Farrell, coach out of his depth, poor man Sean Edwards. So let's move to England-Ireland for a second. But before we do, JB, why don't you tell us why England having a dominant win against Ireland is bad news for England?
Well, because it tells me exactly who England are. And we know this. We know, you know, it's kind of out there. They are a physical, bullying team. And if you are physical with them, they lose. And that's basically all that they are. And Ireland, as I've been saying all week, are England, but just not quite as good. They are about 10% worse than England. And it shows, and that's why they got absolutely manhandled.
It did. I have to agree with that. It did look like that in this game.
Yeah.
It did look like two teams trying to play against each other in the kicking game and the power game, and Ireland coming badly second best on both those counts.
They look like an underdeveloped England team. And they don't even look comfortable doing it. Because I think about Leinster, and Leinster do have an amazing kicking game, they do have an amazing power game, but they do so much more. Maybe the power game for Leinster is so much more threatening because they can do all these other things. And it doesn't seem that this is what Ireland do. They seem to be stripped down to just this one thing, and there's nothing else that they offer.
The 10% could possibly be quantified in the context of George Ford is playing the best rugby of his life, and Johnny Sexton is a shadow of the World Player of the Year from a couple of years ago.
I could not agree more.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have the two most important players who are the undroppables in Murray and Sexton, and they're playing that bad, you have to drop them. They have to go. Like, Cooney should have been on much, much earlier, both for his kicking at sticks and for his kicking out of hand. They brought on Byrne eventually. I think I'd have done that much, much earlier.
It could have happened earlier. Cooney definitely could have happened earlier.
I sort of think with Sexton, I feel like we've been watching his decline since just before the World Cup. Do you know when he got substituted? I can't remember which game it was, but he got substituted before the World Cup. And he looked really disappointed. He just had an off day. And he's not really recovered.
He is getting on now. Not that his pace has ever been spectacular, but he had played so little rugby in before the last Six Nations. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do.
Because of autumn internationals, injuries, not playing for Leinster, and then kind of came in. And he's since we saw him lifting the trophy in Monaco, as World Player of the Year, he's just not looked.
Yeah, he's not.
I've not seen him looking his best.
And Murray was an absolute, well, by his standards, I was going to say an absolute disgrace. No, he's not a disgrace ever. It just wasn't good.
It was not good at all.
The box kicks, it's almost like they, you know, it's almost like they expected it to happen without trying, without doing all the little details right, without the forwards protecting him enough. Just, oh yeah, Murray will just box kick it, you know, to his normal high standard. You know, you've got to put in the effort in order to give him the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, and on Sexton, I will say, credit to England's rush defence, at shutting down when
Maro Itoje was unreal in defence today.
Sam Underhill was ridiculous.
I mean, just
him and Courtney Laws were so good.
Yep.
Defensively,
and when you've got a pack disrupting the ball, so you're not getting clean ball to Murray and Sexton, and then when they do get the disrupted ball, you've got a white wall in their face.
But you can't, I mean, this is it, really. You can see exactly what makes England tick, can't you? When they're on the front foot and they're bullying you and they're rubbing your head in the dirt, and Maratoji is sprinting up into back lines.
Yeah.
I love it. He sprints through into a back line. He gets a little finger on a guy and that's it. He's dead. Like, game over.
And in a way, and I watched it today and saw that a couple of times, exactly what you're talking about. And it's the way that offensive linemen in the NFL manage to, whilst they're being pushed by one guy, managed to just, with a hand only, stop a running back.
Yeah, yeah. He has got, he's just some player. Not that anyone doesn't know that, but he is going to, I mean, the things he's going to do in the championship, he might be the best player in the championship.
He might be.
Next year.
His image rights are going through the roof.
I was
going
to say, James Pettit tweeted to that Rugby Podcast, said Maro's image rights Bargain.
Exactly. Exactly.
Teddy also tweeted, said, can we start trusting in Eddie now?
Well, yeah.
Until he loses a game and then everyone will call for his head and then he'll win a few games. And then...
Do you know he's into meditation? Have you heard this?
Mindfulness, not meditation.
No, he said meditation. No, hang on.
No, he said mindfulness.
Isn't it all the same thing?
The reporter got it wrong.
Is this not this? Hang on. Mindfulness and meditation, they are the same snake oil.
They are
different branches of the same snake oil tree.
Yes, they are different branches. So I think, briefly speaking, meditation is breathing techniques.
Meditation is what you do when
calming,
you're...
Calming, relaxation. But within meditation, people... People achieve that mindfulness process by meditating sometimes. But the mindfulness is about being aware of how your body is like psychosomatically responding.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So, well, because then if you're aware, oh, I've got a knot in my tummy, I'm a bit anxious at the minute, you can then deal with it. Whereas quite a lot of people just react on the top level, will sort of get angry at someone near them because they're anxious, rather than being aware, I'm anxious right now.
I'm sorry, JB.
You make it conscious.
I need to be mindful now because I'm getting really angry. So what does that mean?
Good mindfulness, JB.
I've got a perfect, succinct one sentence definition of the difference that will clear everything up for you, JB.
Oh, okay. Yes, please, Phil.
Here we go. Mindfulness is the awareness of something, while meditation is the awareness of no thing.
Oh my God. The opportunity cost...
I explained it in a very bad way, but I was on the right line.
That is the first time anyone's ever explained anything to me about mindfulness. I thought, oh, I see. That actually makes some sense, you know. But it's no different to saying, if you're angry, take a step back and think.
I will say...
Okay, we all mindful? Let's crack on with lineups,
boys. I will
say
I practice mindfulness in as much as... when you're doing like TV work or something, stuff that's quite intense pressure, you know, I've got 1 minute, it's live on the telly, I don't quite know where the player I'm talking to is because they're moving around warming up and I need to keep half an eye on them while I'm talking to a camera and there's someone talking to me. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And so being like aware, I'm a little bit tense. Just need to...
Relax.
Go
find my player.
Tell myself, yeah, all that. And then, so yeah, being aware that I'm anxious rather than going in and... You know when your voice tightens up a little bit and then you start going a bit high pitched.
Hello, Mr. Sergi.
Eddie Jones is mindful.
If he is mindful, right? If he is the poster child for mindfulness, it does not work. Because
I definitely don't think he wants to be that.
Because he is one of the most highly strung men in all of sport.
Well, him and Michael Checker, great poster boys for mindfulness.
You've been doing what? For how long?
What do you make of him this week with the media? Because he has been very terse, I think was the word Nick Mullins aptly used in commentary today. And he's... I like it.
I think it's hilarious.
I like it.
Journalists need to take themselves less seriously. I mean, the guy's just a rugby coach. And, you know, you try to push him the wrong way, prod him this way, get things out of him, point him in a certain way. And, you know, you want him to be open. And in a way, the terseness is quite open. It gives you a good insight to what the guy is like. I love it.
But then as soon as journalists only want him to be open so that they can create headlines and clickbait. So the gotcha-type moments.
Yeah.
It's not about being open so you can learn about the man and gain one of Ruby's true great intellects.
I know, exactly. I would love the questions to Eddie Jones being... You know, you've got a four on three in the 22. How do you solve this riddle? Fire away, please. That's what I want to. I mean, I know it's incredibly boring.
Mate, you passed the ball.
Yeah, I know it's incredibly boring, but I want to know what one of the greatest minds thinks about rugby.
Yeah,
couldn't care about anything else.
And what one of the greatest minds thinks about having five locks in your squad?
Yeah,
five.
Yeah, this is an amazing thing, right?
Five
locks. The eight, which you pointed out on Twitter.
Having got loads of stick for putting Tom Curry out of position from flanker to eight, where when it comes to taking Courtney Laws off, he puts Tom Curry onto the flank and puts Charlie Yule's a lock at number eight.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful stuff.
And when Ben Earl came on, so Yule's and Earl, Ben Earl, an actual
sat on the flank.
He sat on the flank and Yule sat eight.
Well, I think they sort of, their own scrums, Earl was eight. Yeah. And so defensive scrums,
Think, does this mean you've got a tight head eight and a loose head eight?
Maybe.
Because Yule's is the tight head eight.
Yes.
And Earl's is the loose head eight.
That must be it.
It's the only thing I could possibly think.
Oh, no, it'd be the other way around. Defensive scrums would be the tight head one because you said Earl would be the tight head.
Earl would be the loose head was what
Earl's
I meant.
Yule's is the tight head eight because he gets his head right in and pushes, grunts on defensive scrums.
Yeah.
And Yule's is the loose head eight.
Do you know who believes in tight head locks, by the way? Josh Beaumont 100% believes in tight head locks. I've never got him so animated in my life as to when I asked, do you think tight head locks exist? 100%, absolutely, just completely into it.
I bet he's clearly one of the locks that really puts some grunt in because
he's a line-out guy as well.
Well, he is a line-out guy, but the second rows that really, really give their props something are the ones that are very proud that they are. Well, they give their props
I'm 100% tired lock, 100%. So there you go. So Eddie Jones goes with five locks, two outside centres, two tens.
Three outside centres.
Three outside centres and two tens.
Yeah.
So I'd quite like to know his thought process. But I mean, there's so many things I want to know about him, and I just don't feel questions are asked.
Let's just put it, they won in a dominant fashion and will be disappointed not to have got a bonus point.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Elliot Daly was excellent.
Yeah, 15, yeah.
Jonathan Joseph was really competent in his first start on the wing.
Yeah.
And the back row, whilst it might not enable the very best of Tom Curry, what it did, having Laws and Underhill on the pitch as well, was just set the tone defensively.
Yeah, I love the aggressiveness that those guys bring. And you know, maybe the Tom Curry thing isn't that stupid. Maybe because of what he brings around the park.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because I can't think of anyone else who plays eight who can do that.
The only issue I've had in his three starts at eight now is his footwork in three scrums in the French game. Besides that, he's been brilliant.
Yeah, and the England scrum isn't as powerful as people think it is. That's the other thing. There are still weaknesses in Carl Sinclair's game, scrummaging. There are still weaknesses, maybe in that whole scrum. Usually they're fine. They'll do enough.
But Carl Sinclair's an interesting one. A rousing one, mm-hmm. Because, and just to make the point that the game in France was just a really bad England 40 minutes. It isn't that England are terrible, as you and lots of other people started to say, Eddie Jones has lost the plot, what's he doing? Because the difference, a lot of players just had off days, like Carl Sinclair. Like today, he did beautiful little lift passes.
Yep.
He made great ball carries. He made good decisions in the game.
But that's because he's not under pressure.
The game in Paris, he
was under pressure.
He got
beaten up.
He had two. I was going to say two left hands, but that doesn't make sense, does it?
I mean, he tried playing with two left hands, mate. it works perfectly.
How would work.
Two right hands wouldn't be good either. In fairness,
yeah.
So, double-handed. That's how he played double-handed.
I'm just trying to work out how. That would be weird, actually.
Just unscrew one of them and put it in the other way.
Kyle Sinclair's a great example of England at their best when he's on the front foot, world-class, absolute dominant. When you put him under pressure,
you're doing is describing rugby teams.
Exactly what
How is that
that's,
different
that's
from
exactly
any
what
other team? What's that
podcast
got to do with England? If they play well, then they're more likely to win. If they play badly, they're more likely to lose.
The team that scores more points often wins.
Correct.
It is no secret.
If you don't score any points, you don't win many games.
I think what I'm trying to say is you need to be physically dominant. There you go. Simple as that. And when England are physically dominant, they're an awesome force.
And they're not alone in that. Ireland, exactly the same.
Yep.
So they did struggle up front this week. They were pretty dominant 2 weeks ago against Wales.
Mm-hmm.
4-try bonus point. Win. So
what do you think the Farrell household is like tonight? I know Owen doesn't live at home anymore. He used to, it was only a couple of years ago he was still living at home after games like this when Andy Farrell was defence coach with Ireland.
I'm sure James Haskell lived at home until like 28. I'm sure he did.
Why not?
It saves some money. His dad's got a massive house, so why not? who knows? Don't know what that.
How will his mum be when they
delighted? I guess because Owen won.
Yeah, Owen won, but Andy will not be happy with that performance.
She'll be hugging Andy, but looking over the shoulder, doing a thumbs up and a wave. Owen,
well done. Oh, it's okay, Andy. Well done, Owen.
I think she'd be happy with this because Owen can always be dropped whilst Andy has a contract. So he's going to be there for a long time. He doesn't drop himself. So he's there for what, 3 years?
4 year cycle.
Four years. He can afford to drop a game every so often. If it's against Owen, it's fine.
But the Ireland performance is frustrating because they seem to, certainly in that first half, they got no change out of the England defence, no change out of the line-out, no change out of the rolling maul. Stockers, Conway, Lama weren't making ground at all.
Nope.
Couldn't get them into the game.
The kicks were abysmal.
England did a great job of winding up some of the Irish forwards. Mm. James Ryan, there was a few...
Time bomb.
Yeah. He, I think, was lucky not to do anything.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Stupid enough to give himself a yellow card. He flopped on Curry off the ball that didn't get picked up.
You're doing something very, very well when James Ryan is losing his head.
He was totally losing his head.
I couldn't quite work out what happened with Farrell. And CJ Stander, maybe?
That was hilarious.
I think Farrell was lucky not to get yellow carded.
I think they're both lucky not to get yellow carded.
Come on.
Well, so what? Just run it.
Come on. Right.
Let me tell you what I saw. Farrell does something ridiculous on the floor. He's trying to hold CJ Stander's leg.
I think Stander was doing something to Mario Itoje. Whatever that was. Farrell grabbed his leg. Like, I'm looking after my mate.
Yeah.
This is going to work.
And then... what was it? I'm not going to be able to find the tweet. But someone sent us a tweet saying that Farrell was grabbing CJ Stander's leg like he was hanging on to a father that said he'll never love him. And CJ Stander was just doing some, weighted leg raises.
And then CJ Stander, I know he's not punching him on the floor. It was open hands. Yeah, but it looks, from the angle, it looks like he's filling him in, which is a great angle.
Which he deserved.
Fill my heart with joy.
I love this. Yeah. Do you know the times when someone ties you into a mall by grabbing hold of your shirt and you're trying to get away? What do you do?
Slap it.
You whack their arm.
Yeah.
You punch down on their arm, and that's just a bit of self-policing.
Yeah.
We shouldn't get rid of all the self-policing.
I'm not saying we should.
Shouldn't dish out penalties and yellow cards for all of the self-policing. A bit of it was all right, and it was a bit of fun.
It was good to watch.
Now, Stander also got into it with Itoje, didn't
he? Itoje with the shirt.
Yeah.
And Itoje had both Stander and James Ryan at one point. He's tying both of them in.
Who got into a little bit of argy-bargy on the weekend?
Teddy Thomas and Josh Adams had a little bit.
Did they? No, someone else. What am I thinking of here? Was it the Sale game?
I was going to say, I bet it's a Sale game.
Was it the Sale game?
Oh, I was going to say it's a joke.
Dan Cole and Jono Ross.
That was a real good bit of a ding dong there.
Good.
Although I don't know. I mean, I respect Jono Ross a lot, but I don't think he's going to be able to intimidate Dan Cole with a bit of wrestling.
No.
And then Dan Cole's on top of him. Like, Dan Cole's going nowhere.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yes, I mean, there's a lot of people in the cesspit on Twitter were saying that's got to be a yellow card, red card. You can't do that. Both for CJ Stander and for Owen Farrell. Let the boys play.
I agreed with Owen Farrell when he got up because you can't do that. I was like, I agree with Owen. I'm with Owen. On
wow, yeah, but, put yeah, that on the whiteboard.
Yeah.
You grab...
but there again, then you grab
CJ Stander's leg, and because Owen Farrell's point was, he was bound on in the mall. He can't just get up and leave a mall, which is fair enough. But
was it
also
a mall?
If yeah, or a ruck. Well, no, he was bound onto the ruck, sorry.
Yeah.
So Owen was like, Owen Farrell's point was, he can't... He was bound into the ruck, so... But nevertheless, if you're on the floor, you're out the game.
Yeah. Exactly right. So when I saw the first thing, the slapping, I thought, ooh, that's a bit naughty. Someone should get penalised for that. But then I watched the initial thing, I thought, that's stupid. Why is he holding onto his... I mean, I couldn't work out what he was trying to achieve.
That's the bit that got me. It was just so stupid.
I mean, if you just think about it like this, where would you want your number one playmaker and leader? Oh, I'd like him at the bottom of the ruck holding on to the next leg. No, you want him on his feet in the defensive line or ready to get a ball.
Getting slapped in the stomach by number eight.
It makes no sense.
I as an Englishman, I quite like it when Owen Farrell is hated by other people.
Owen Farrell, as I've said many, many times, is basically wants to be the player that Dan Biggar is. That is where we're at. He would love to be Dan Biggar. He's he's a really bad Dan Biggar impersonator.
He was awesome.
Both of them were awesome.
They were both awesome. Just on the Farrell thing, Steve Parrott, who has tweeted us to say...
About your rudeness, actually.
Oh, yeah, did you see Steve Parrott today?
Oh, yeah, well, about my... I went down to Exeter.
Incredibly rude.
And he said I stayed indoors the whole time, which...
Is that true?
Is...
You have mentioned that you don't like to mix with the masses. What do you call them? The proles.
Proletariat.
Yeah.
Well...
How is Exeter today, Tim, full of proles?
Exeter's got a great setup where the tunnel and the whole tunnel area, you can get yourself a brew. Uh-huh. There's a little monitor, so when there's something you want to go and look at a replay of...
Do BT still have those security guys that clear the way? And tell people not to look you in the eyes. Do you know when you're in like the crowds?
Yeah, contracted. Yeah, exactly. Actually, you know,
don't look at him.
I did a bit today that was on the other side of the pitch, in front of like the real diehard Chiefs fans, not the side with the tunnel. And I walked over there, and the second, and I've seen this before when Martin Bayfield's doing some bits and bobs. The second that anyone with a microphone goes over there, they try their best to put you off. Anything they can, so they make loads of noise. They were going, we want flats. We want flats.
Unbelievable.
While I was doing it. And who are you? Who are you? It was good crack. Anyway, Steve Parrott says, is the Farrell father-son relationship a retelling of the Odysseus and Telemachus relationship in Homer's Iliad?
That is a question for Stuart Barnes, not me.
Which is, so Telemachus is the son of Odysseus and Penelope in Greek mythology. When Telemachus reached manhood, he went in search for his wandering father. On his return, he found that Odysseus had reached home before him. Then father and son slew the suitors who had gathered around Penelope.
Ooh.
According to later tradition, Telemachus married... Oh, so what's that got to do with this? Oh, right, so basically they're fighting for mum's affection.
Right.
Okay.
Sorry.
I've got no idea.
Going back to the hug. Yes, yeah. Probably right, Steve.
Probably,
it's
yes.
Beautiful.
Yes. Yes.
That might get kids interested in Greek mythology again.
Exactly right.
And turn them off Rugby Podcast.
Any more about England? Let's just mention Ireland's woefulness in their own dead ball area. The only time they really need to be that turned on, and they completely switched off.
Yeah, and the terrible from an Ireland perspective. It's good to exploit it from an England perspective, but that actually does highlight a weakness of England, which played out in the France game, it played out in the New Zealand game in the semi-final, even though England played brilliantly in that, which is they get into the right parts of the field and then they seem to lack that creativity, that spark to get the final 5 metres.
Yeah,
and this was Ireland mistakes and the Karen Dickey try, which was just pure power.
Yeah, if they don't have a bit of trickery up their sleeves, sometimes they do fail, and they did fail quite a few times in the 5 metre area. Yeah. They seem to be very frantic.
That's a good word to describe it. Everyone's running a million miles an hour.
Mm.
Literally a million miles an hour.
Literally.
Onto it. And there's only so many times you can do that.
Mm.
And they will... It just fails.
Yeah.
Actually.
Maybe a bit more of an exit to pick and go. Take your time. Grind them through. Grind with the gears.
Keep grinding.
Aim towards the posts.
The infinite grind of Exeter Chiefs.
Yeah, which I can't wait to talk about later.
In a few days' time.
In a couple of days' time. Cool. So that's everything in Six Nations, unless anyone's got anything else to add.
I'm just having a look. Oh, Tom Crick, to at Rugby Podcast, Death Taxes, and second half, Cowan Dickey, Maul tries.
Very yes. good.
He came on earlier than I was expecting. Cowan Dickey. I thought he played really well.
He's pressuring for a start. Jamie George is good.
I love having both of them.
Yeah.
Agreed. And Cowan Dickey made two superb cover tackles on John Cooney when Ireland broke England's line.
Best hooker matchup I've seen in the flesh: Cowan Dickey versus Acca.
That was brilliant. That. Yeah,
Is that in the European
game this season?
I don't know what it was, but...
It'll always be Mullet-Dicky to me.
MHD.
Yep.
MHD. We used to call him MHD.
Yeah. LCD.
Also, LCD, you know, MHD. It's the Wasp prop. Stuart had a rather swanky new haircut.
Oh, yeah, Marla's haircut.
No, Marla got his removed completely.
Marla, yeah. Which looked cool with the beard.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And Genge, I wasn't sure about his little artwork on the side of his head, but hey...
Whichever.
Genge can do whatever he wants.
I would have preferred it if he'd done what Joe Marler did a few years back and had sausages shaved in into his hair.
Genge, his first scrum when he came on.
Awesome. Loved it.
Awesome.
Loved it. I didn't agree with the pinging on the second one, though.
No.
I thought that was a bit harsh. But again, it's lottery time.
Yeah, and at that point, it kind of didn't matter, really.
No.
Trevor Morgan tweeted, the out-of-position lads played really well. I might have already said that tweet, actually, but anyway. Yep. Gaz tweeted saying he's on his way back from the game and he's an Ireland fan and he's been musing on a poor performance. The hot takes, much as we've already said, Murray and Sexton... Well, no, I'm not saying that. He said, Murray and Sexton, end of days now.
I agree. Well, it's end of days in terms of they're not going to be around in another 4 years.
Murray will be.
Why hell's Murray?
I want to say 30.
And the thing is, Cooney's not a young man either.
28, 29.
Yeah.
I mean, Cooney's definitely got a World Cup in him. Murray, not so much.
Let's have a look.
Mind you, is there anyone else really emerging?
He's 30.
Well, we'd be having a different conversation if Carberry had been fit all season.
Yeah.
On the 10 front.
But he's had a couple of years of injuries, yeah. Carberry.
Are you missing another 10 somewhere?
Burn, Carberry. Well, the two Burns. So Burn and Burns.
Billy Burns. Paddy Jackson.
And they'll be ruining the what happened to Paddy Jackson. Or what Paddy Jackson brought upon himself.
Yes, correct.
Yes, whatever happened there. Right, bring it home, Tim.
And Stockdale, very poor, is what he also said. Which is something we haven't said, because he was another that you would be saying a year or two ago, oh, he's a Lions starter. But he's not looking necessarily like a Lions starter at the moment.
No, but they are, as I said before, they're struggling to bring him into the game for whatever reason.
I tell you what, talking of Lions starters, George North.
Poor George North.
I don't say this lightly. I think he should give it up.
He looked really good
in that
opening quarter before he got the knock.
It's just, I think it's too dangerous now.
So he's going out with or married to... What's the name of the...
Cyclist.
Yeah, Olympic cyclist. I think she's pregnant at the moment. It might be time to...
It's
the number of times. It's the ease and how bad they are. I mean, that one was totally innocuous. Rugby incident. No one suggests anything otherwise, but he was...
The violence of how he hits the ground.
Oh, God.
I think it's... It's not really about if I want to watch it or not, really. It's more a case of
BBC replayed that like five times at half time.
Yeah.
That should not have been replayed.
I hope he's been wise with his money, because I think he should give it up now. I just don't see this. The money is great. And this is the deal with the devil of professional rugby. He is getting paid a lot of money. So just to give it up is going to be difficult.
I would read the Shontaine Happy story that he told a few years ago of being the big money player playing in France and effectively hiding his concussions.
Yeah.
And read about the consequences.
Well, how long is he going to be stood down for now?
It's return to play protocol. So he might, if he passed the protocol, he could play on the weekend.
Because, and the other thing about concussion, it doesn't have to be, you could get a concussion without contact.
Mm.
It can be from a tackle at waist height that whiplashes your body. So no, it's not like that. That's why they have the standardized testings and why it's a medical condition. Why George North will have to be very honest about any symptoms, headaches. I hope he is. I'm sure he will be.
Yeah, well, you don't know what money's involved, what financial pressures there are. You don't know any of these things.
Sean's ain't happy again.
Exactly.
The education, I think, is much better these days and getting better, but there's still a lot we do not know.
There again, with all, I'm saying give up now, but with all the knowledge in the world, if I knew everything about concussions, but you still offered me 250k for another year, I think I'd lie. I mean, I'm not going to earn 250k once I've stopped.
Yeah.
So I think I would lie, yeah. Anyway, enough of that.
Yeah, it's not an easy decision.
What a thrilling end.
What a depressing...
What a really upbeat end.
Oh, there must be something more... All right.
Okay, here's something a bit more upbeat then end on. Try and find the video. I was just looking and I can't find it. But basically, when George Ford kicks the ball out to end the game and go to celebrate a fantastic test victory at Twickenham against Ireland... He absolutely wallops the ball low, and it whacks an old fella in the face.
Oh, well, weird you mention this, right? Because when he scores his try,
he kicks it low. Then
he kicked it low, right? I was like, "Is that one's? The, where's
the? Yeah. Oh no, that might be the try. Yeah. I've just watched a video of him kicking the ball into. It might be that guy.
Is he in the ball area?
Yeah, and he's got a flat cap on, and he sat down with a. And just gets clocked.
Concussed
in the face.
Now.
I mean, if he'd have caught it, he might have,
Grandad's special treat been, for his 80th.
He might have been
dead.
I thought we were going for something more upbeat.
He also celebrated, and it looked like he wanted to jump into the crowd.
Yeah, he did.
Okay. Settle down, George. Settle down.
I look at him, and I think the amount of stick that he has taken over the last few years, and the number of even England fans that just need to eat proper humble pie. And I think about Eddie Jones. I definitely think about George Ford. I just think he's playing out of his skin.
He's very good at the moment.
And the Ford Farrell thing, which started as an accident, and everyone was saying you can't. England are going to be nothing without Ford Farrell, you included.
Without Ford and Farrell.
You were heavily critical of Ford Farrell.
Hang on. You said nothing without Ford and Farrell. I think they would be nothing without Ford and Farrell.
Oh, okay.
Would be nothing without Ford and Farrell. What would they do?
Well, yeah, exactly. They'd go to Alangi Slade.
No. If you didn't have Ford or Farrell...
Marcus Smith? Who's the third choice in the... Jacob Umaga.
I think that's a fairly reasonable shot to say there'd be nothing without Ford and Farrell.
Love him.
They're doing well. They are doing well, but we know what they are. We know how to beat them.
We know what they are. Yeah.
And this is why England needs to be worried. And the blueprint is out there. South Africa. Why can't there be more intelligent coaches like, for instance, Warren Gatland, who would unpick that team at will whenever he wants? Right, come on, Tim. Bring it home.
Come on, then. Thank you very much for listening to this one. Make sure you hit subscribe, because we will be doing a domestic rugby podcast where we'll cover off all the other stories all the rumours, the transfers and the games from the Premiership and assorted other bits and bobs. And we'll do that. So hit subscribe in the feed, wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your mates. Follow him at Jay Beardmore, me at Cocker, Phil lurking in your DMs. He'll let you know if he wants to hear, if he wants to get
you
in touch with you.
Yeah.
And we are at Rugby Podcast in the cesspit. Till next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.